friends, I'm DJ Lance Rock, and I have to say, Rock and Roll Grad School is awesome!
This is Rock and Roll Grad School with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling. All their favorite songs are slow and sad.
Hello, kiddies. We are going to have a real good time together. We are talking with Mama B, who has her debut children's record coming out next month.
I guess
it would be debut album as well. Yes. But you don't really see the best you can get, I think, is like one kid song out of a group or musician.
Well,
for the most part.
Yeah. Ish.
If you're lucky, you get a Jerry Garcia or They Might Be Giants or someone of that ilk cutting a whole record. But
you're gonna don't sing the hot dog song.
No, I wasn't gonna sing that.
Oh, you're going to though now. It's gonna be
well
head.
Now I'm gonna have it stuck in my head. So
I know, you're welcome.
Whose fault is that?
Yours.
So I feel like the news has been there's a lot of tours, there are a lot of farewell tours, but I did see one thing today, because you know why I'm always looking for the silver lining.
Oh, always.
Our former friend or friend of the show, not former, Warren Ellis and his group, The Dirty Three, have their first album in 12 years, something like that, coming out.
Nice.
Coming out in June, the follow-up to Toward the Low Sun. This is called Love Changes Everything. And they are lovely.
Are they doing a cover of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Aspects of Love?
Oh my God, maybe.
Because that would be amazing.
No, when I think Warren Ellis, I think
show Andrew Lloyd Webber. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I think it's the beard.
Right.
Probably. How did you do on ELO tickets?
We're going.
You are going.
Mm-hmm. We went. The first we weren't going to go because they were pricey.
Right.
Which hasn't stopped us from other shows, but it was that we weren't going to go. Oh, apparently my ticket person decided they were worthy of going or found a better price, or they were, I don't know, they went down. I don't know.
Gotcha.
Got on the telephone line. Mr. Blue Sky decided that the skies were blue enough to go, but just the two of us, no one else is going.
Oh, so do you? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. Finally pulled the ripcord on Primus tickets.
Nice.
So the elder is very excited.
Excellent.
He recently received a record player.
So now there are multiple record players in the house?
Correct. And his entire oeuvre of vinyl right now is just Primus albums.
Wow.
So you've got your suck on this, your pork soda.
Excellent.
Yeah, so he is ready. And it's not part of this weird tour they're doing, this Sasanta. It's like them and Perfect Circle and somebody else.
Yeah.
Which friend of the show, Josh Fries, is playing on. It is an evening with Primus. So
sounds quite lovely.
As the kids like to say, it will suck.
Of course.
So.
As it should.
Right, exactly.
It would
So the fact that you're celebrating having no children in the car and the fact that you're calling from the car makes me feel like, you know, usually the first question would be, oh, as a musician, why did you decide to make a children's record? I feel like we have that answer.
Well, yes, it is. It's sort of twofold. Like for me, it was because I wasn't exactly hearing what I wanted to hear that was pleasant for my ears and that I could listen to on repetition. So there was a couple, I never really as a kid listened to children's music. So I didn't grow up with like even the concept of like that genre. I just listened to what my parents were listening. Kudos to them. But, you know, I am inundated with all sorts of sort of like franchise type children's content. And I really wanted to make something wholesome and timeless and, you know, looked at artists like Rafi, who sort of, you know, stand the test of time and their melodies and lyrics are still great. So I wanted to do something like that.
Seems like a tall order in some ways, was it? Yeah. Or
I mean, timeless, like, I mean, right. What is timeless can be, you know, timeless for me is different from what it is for you. I just wanted to make like classic music, you know, like mm-hmm. have beautiful melodies, great production. For me, just because it's the children's space, and I feel like a lot of artists in the children's space feel the same, like doesn't need to be mean that it needs to be saturated by any means. My background is as a pop singer-songwriter, jazz singer-songwriter, and so my world is a lot of musicians. So I called on the same people I would have called on for a record for me or for another artist, and you know, the session didn't change just because the genre had changed.
And with that, with it, with the genre, just shifting the genre, but not changing the session or the musicians or the classicness, lack of a better sort of word, kind of. What was the shift? What makes it, other than the lyrics, what makes it a kid's song?
That's a good question. I think the freedom of it, you know, you can get so in your head when you're writing for a session for yourself, like, am I saying it the right way? Am I saying it in a way that's new? And like everything for me felt very freeing in these writing sessions because it was sort of like top of mind. You know, what came first was the greatest idea probably we would have all day. So we would roll with it. So that's really the only shift for me personally, and for the, you know, the feedback I got from the different collaborators I have on the project was similar in that, like, this is so much fun. Like the laughs, the, you know, the ideas that came, like, you know, we got to think like kids. And I got to bring in ideas from my kids of what them and their peers were into. So this album actually took like 2 years. Not in that we were so like, you know, nitpicking anything, but it's just life, you know, we were doing it in between life. So some of the topics of some of the songs were themes my son was really into 2 years ago. And then playing it for him now, he's like, oh, I'm not so into rocket ship. Of course,
right.
Lame.
Like, well.
I feel like everyone's got their animal phase, their era that they go through.
Sure. So like you can sort of see how the album evolves because like my I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and the 5-year-old now is sort of on the brink where like production really resonates with him. So like a Dua Lipa song, production wise, really like makes him move. But obviously, like lyrically and topically, like it's like out of the realm. So it's like I tried to sort of evolve. There's some like kind of dancey tracks on the album that happened sort of near the end of the project because that's what he was really feeling at the time.
So you had this great audience of one to
my test audience.
I was gonna say road test it or
beta testing.
Network it. Yeah. That's interesting. Did it change your songwriting any?
I think it actually helped it a lot, just from like almost like a mental standpoint. Like I didn't think too much about it. And if a song took too long, or if it didn't like it, if it didn't like have movement in the session, we just moved on. Whereas if it was, this is my project, but if it was a project I was releasing as a, like a pop artist, you know, I would just make something work and I would force it until like we, there was an end product. So I think it changed my mindset quite a bit on like what great, like, sorry, great. So what good songwriting can look like, you know, in different genres.
Do you think, did it take you a while to reach that point of, I don't want to say acceptance again, good versus great acceptance, right. But the idea of like trusting that gut, that's like the first idea in this instance, this works really well, and not being like, could we do this better if we
I think songwriters and artists are so hard on themselves. They're their hardest critics. And with this, you know, for whatever reason, I was like, oh, this is awesome. Every time we finished a song, I was like, that was a great song. Oh, we did another great song. Like, I was just very proud of myself and, you know, the collaborations that I was having, and didn't feel that same, I would say, like, criticism, self-criticism, like I'm used to, you know, that kind of commentary in your head of like, oh, this could be better. You know, I just heard that album. Maybe we should make it more like this. It was just freedom.
But was there a moment, did you kind of go like, something's wrong, this is going too easy? Or was it like, you know what I mean? Finding that level of like, no, this is a good song, we can move on.
I mean, I think there was a couple sessions that we had sort of near the beginning of the 2 years. I think one of the first songs we wrote actually was Unicorn, which is the only song that's out right now. And the track was intended actually for a pop session. It was very different sounding than it is now. But I think once we were able to, because the kind of fear I had in writing with more production, because I love like organic sounds and instrumentation, was that it would sound too mature for kids. So once we sort of found that balance of, oh, like kids' music can also have like big full body sounds and also feel organic too. That was sort of like the aha moment where we just built the rest of the songs around it.
Is there any sound or tone of a song that kids don't seem to respond to? Like, could you play them like the kids' music version of Can, and that'd be, someone would be like, all right, I get this. Or there's certain things that children are just never going to go along with.
I think, I mean, the kids resonate. Like, it's interesting because I've had kind of have a just a mom group I've been sending the full album to see what's resonating with who. And, you know, it's all respective to people's tastes. But I think across the board, it doesn't change too much from what like an adult audience resonates with, which is like repetition and lyrics that are easy and singable. With kids particularly, I try to find like sounds that and like repetition of like consonants, slithery snake, you know, for example, like those kind of things that are like word candy, you know, tend to resonate. The Shake It song that we have, there's a lot of sort of like anthemic type of like sing-songy things that you would hear on the playground. So that kind of resonates. Like there's like a London Bridge falling down reference like melodically in there too. So yeah, I was just trying to pull from things that I know just kids, you know, it lights up kids when they hear it.
But to your point, as to kind of what you mentioned as your earlier inspiration, it has to resonate with the kids, but not drive the parents crazy. Yes. Right.
Yeah. And there's actually, there's a lot of great content in the children's space. It's just hard to find it because you don't know that it's not like their household names necessarily that you would see on a billboard, or like, how would you know if you didn't have kids or someone telling you? So as I've kind of delved deeper into this space, I'm like, oh, there's some great stuff in here, but I still thought I could make my own mark with my own sound too.
Who are some of the artists that you look to say, like, they're doing it right in the kids' space?
That's a good question. I think there's so many that have their distinct, like, brand and idea. I think Christina Perry, who is not a, she's a pop artist, who wrote hit songs, but she was releasing a series of lullabies for her kids. And her voice is just so beautiful in tone. She has some originals in there too. I was like, oh, this is beautiful. I can listen to this from like A to Z and love it. I also look to songwriters that I love. There's a songwriter, Daniel Tashin, who is across all of Kacey Musgraves' albums, who released a series of albums and was actually nominated for Best Children's Category as well a couple years back. He released a couple albums with his daughters. And I can tell from just listening to it, the like freedom and joy he had in making it with his family. So once I sort of started hearing things like that, I was like, ah, okay. I took little bits and pieces of what I loved from everybody and made it my own.
Is this an area you think you'll continue to slither through?
I like what you did there.
Thank you.
I mean, I have no plans in detouring from it. I feel like I'm just getting started and like dipping my toes in it a bit. And have a lot to learn and more sounds to play with. The idea has sort of been evolving with my kids as they're growing up. So I still have like a nearly 2-year-old, so there's time to kind of get into his world a little bit. I've been sort of following my 5-year-old's trajectory quite a bit and what he's into, but who knows what my second one will be into.
Oh yeah, you don't want the 2-year-old to come up and be like, where's my album?
Yeah, where's my album? I know, I feel bad. I didn't, my oldest one's voice is in a lot of this. He was in the first album I did, and he's in this one quite a bit too. But I didn't get the baby in there. But
next time, we gotta make it a trilogy.
For no other reason.
And I'll have like a song named after him.
Decades of holidays. Well, I didn't get an album. You know it's coming. Yeah. You know it's coming. Every family will has that, whatever it is.
You know, you mentioned when you were talking about other artists, and I think you hear it on your records as well, the sense of fun that's inherently in this music and in the songs. And having spent very little time in a recording situation, that's not always a word I would use to describe a recording situation or any artistic, you know, you don't want to see the art getting made. How do you keep that sort of like, smile, damn it, we're doing this for the children, through days of recording and reworking these songs and doing all the actual production of making a record?
That's a good
question.
Or am
I just making records with terrible people?
I think that's the first because
I think the way that I've been approaching these kids albums is, well, this is my first full length one, but is to really like spread out the kind of creative aspect of it. And so it didn't really feel like I was never in the studio for like 10 days in a row, recording, you know. I was sort of doing it as I went along, and I didn't want too much time to pass to record a song after we finished writing it. So it's like it was like a slow burn, so I never felt tired of anything because it was a concentrated time for sort of like the writing and the recording of it. And then at the end, the best part was bringing all the musicians in to record live, and it was a beautiful studio, and everyone was so excited to do this because no one had ever done a session in the children's space before. And like, everyone just had so much fun with it. Like the percussionist literally brought like every toy that he's ever wanted to play with on an album and like managed to figure out a way to utilize all of his little trinkets.
That's great. That's when you look back at, you said the one full record, the earlier batch of songs, can you see a progression in your writing for kids as you move through?
Yeah, that's a good point. The first one was such like a great joy time. It was so much of an experiment because I had never thought about the kids' space. I had never written a kids' song. It was very much, the inspiration was really to make my kids smile or laugh with, you know, some sounds I was making. So I definitely wanted to evolve. I knew for the second album, I wanted there to be more instrumentation and have it feel a bit more contemporary, with like listening, like you could listen to this song and then you could listen to, you know, top 40s and like hear similarities, not in lyrics, but in production. So I expect that I'll continue evolving the sound as I do more albums. And like fine tuning what I want to say, because the way that I've been approaching these albums is really song by song. And then somehow I always seem to find like a through line. There always seems to be like a similarity in just themes and sonic sounds. So who knows what the next one will be. I have aspirations to do an album in Spanish. I haven't found, there's some great children's artists that do, write in Spanish and perform in Spanish. But I'd love to enter that space as well.
Awesome. Was there any song on either of the, or either of your works that the subject matter you snuck in something that was your favorite as a child?
Ooh. Yeah. So there's a song Pufferfish. And although it seems very, you know what the theme is, it's about pufferfish. The inspiration came from one of my favorite songs, even as a kid, because I heard this song on Bette Midler's Hocus Pocus with Sarah Jessica Parker, and it was a Harry Nilsson song, like, put the lime in the coconut. I've always loved that song, and my kids have always loved that song, so I snuck in. Although the finished product doesn't really sound all that much like it, I really wanted to find that vibe and that kind of swing to the melody. So I actually tried to do it twice. I tried to first start it with the song Bugs, which has some sonic similarities. And I was like, oh my gosh, the song's completely different. We're gonna, like, that will be its own thing. And then we started fresh with Pufferfish.
That's got to be great. I mean, from a kid's perspective, I could see that, like, listening to this music now and then years down the road, getting into Harry Nilsson or something else and hearing it and going, oh, I see what she was doing there. Like, the nice thing is the shelf life of these records is infinite.
I appreciate you saying that. I mean, Harry Nilsson obviously is a songwriter of our times, right? But he actually has quite a few records that you can listen to A to Z that almost feel like children's records.
Sure.
Particularly the one, The Point, where it's almost like a narration. Like, I actually haven't delved too deeply in like the themes. It's probably like quite adult. But I feel like that's sort of what I want to try to do. Like, who knows, I may do another, like, you know, pop jazz record at some point too, but I feel like I'll always continue taking at like inspiration from what I'm listening to or songs I love and putting them into like kids' music.
You're right. He does have a lot of, later on, if you go to Blanket for a Sale, and I can't remember which record it's on, is mind blowing.
I would love, you know, obviously I love this world of children's musicians, but like I want my kids to know songwriters and artists like Harry Nilsson, like the classics too. And if they're not into the classics, then I'll like reinterpret the classics into songs that they can really like sink their teeth into.
Now, I think last question for me, I don't want to lead you along with false pretenses. Our listenership for the podcast in the 1 to 8 demo is not huge. But adults.
But that's okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. So what did the parents think of this?
I wrote this song with kids in mind, but like it's not like kids are pressing the phone. Well, not some of them are, but right. Like, you know, the demo that I'm looking for, it's not like grabbing the phone, like pulling up Spotify and searching for my name, right?
I mean, yet.
I know. Kids use it. But I wrote this song for parents, for people like me, for, you know, I'm driving down to, like, on a 2-hour car ride tonight, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I going to listen to that'll, like, satisfy everybody in the car? So that's who I'm aiming for, is kind of, like, young families, old families, doesn't matter, and, like, providing a soundscape to kind of, for them to maybe check out and for their kids to just, like, chill out to as well.
In the early morning light, I can see her colors bright outside my room.
Imaginology, the debut album by Mama B, is available May 12th, wherever you get your records. For more information, you can follow her on Facebook. There she is at facebook.com/MamaBSongs. She is also on Instagram at MamaBSongs, and you can follow her on her website at MamaBSongs.com.
You can check us out on all the various socials. Be sure to visit our website at rockandrollgradschool.com, and don't forget to leave us a review.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hegquist. Our reluctant producers are John Sauvay and Sandy Stone. Our willing producers are Rachel Allen and Randy Jeanette. Our intern is Zach Jackson. This one's for Philippe. Thank you, good night, and may all your favorite bands stay together. My unicorn.
They say it's make-believe, but I see her come alive. A magic friend, one of a kind. They say it's fantasy, but I know she's real inside. A dream I had that's come to life. She's got that purple hair, her glittered wings catch air. We like to ride up in the